Let's all go to the lobby. 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 Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinema Shakedown, the weekly podcast that functions as a grab bag for all things film. I'm your host, Kyle Craigbaum.
And I'm your other host, Jordan Dennis.
You are?
Yeah, fuck yeah,
Is that your name?
Yeah!
This week we will be talking about three new releases. First, the moderately anticipated sequel reboot to the Ghostbusters franchise, Ghostbusters Afterlife.
I'm sure everyone over 40 is very excited about
this movie. And then we have the new biopic about Venus and Serena.
Will Smith's latest attempt to get an Oscar.
The biopic about Venus and Serena Williams' father.
King Richard. I forget what it was called for a second.
I was like, the way I set that up, I was like, I was trying to say the character's name, but then the title is King Richard. I fucked myself up.
Yeah, for sure.
And last but not least, we are going to be talking about Lin-Manuel Miranda's directorial debut, the adaptation of Jonathan Larson's Tick, Tick, Boom. Before we get into all that, how are you doing?
All right. Kind of tired.
Yeah?
Yeah. And we're about, after we record this, we're going to go fucking see House of Gucci, so I'm hoping we can get this done and I can maybe sneak a nap in between. How you doing, bud? How are things with you?
I'm chilling. I'm kicking it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. You watch anything this week?
I watched a couple things. We watched Spider-Man 3 together.
We did. I watched...
You watched all three of them.
One and two as well. I'm going to try and watch the other ones before No Way Home comes out. But yeah, they're awesome.
They're obviously all, like, some of the most nostalgic movies for both of us.
Spider-Man 3 is a lot better than I feel like most people are willing to admit.
I think it's closer in tone to the other two than people are willing
it's
to admit.
Like, the silliness is not nearly as out of place as some
like,
people
act like it's the silliness started with 3. Like,
it's
no.
Like, no, they were all, like, goofy and cheesy and everything. The dance scene? Hilarious. Genuinely.
We'll meet again. Spider-Man.
That is what the Green Goblin says.
I
can't wait for the MCU to ruin all of these characters.
I get less excited for No Way Home the more I see about it.
Here's the thing.
It's
a 2-hour and 30-minute movie, and we've seen clips from, like, 3 scenes.
It's a good point.
You know what I mean? So I think
it's a good point.
I am willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. Based on the idea that we haven't seen, like, 80% of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We have no idea, like, what context any of the horrible, lame jokes or dialogue. Like,
yeah.
Like
you're right, though. You are right.
With the way trailers are made today, like, this could all be, like, cut and copied and pasted from different scenes and switched in and out and everything just to intentionally mislead us.
It could be great.
So, I do agree with you, though. Based on what we have seen, I'm not super impressed. Or convinced,
mm-hmm.
But obviously I'm gonna see it. So we'll see then.
It could be great, or it could be a horrible fan fiction. Who knows?
Could be a great fan fiction,
or it could be a great fan fiction.
Well, I guess we'll see you on December 17th.
On December 17th, I saw the Disney Plus original film Home Sweet Home Alone.
Oh God!
Yeah.
Why'd you do that?
I don't know.
Because you hate yourself?
Yeah, probably.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on Home Sweet Home Alone?
No thoughts, just Home Alone. No, I've thought about this for days now.
Yeah.
I think it's the worst movie of the year.
You think so?
I think it might be worse than Cinderella.
Okay.
Cinderella has a Billy Porter cameo. This movie does not.
I've actually been thinking about it too. I think I might like He's All That a little less than Cinderella. Because I'll tell you what.
Mm.
At least a Cinderella movie led by Camila Cabello, like, makes sense from, like, a boardroom standpoint. Like, I get why that movie was made.
Yeah.
I don't know who He's All That is for.
That's fair.
Because anyone who has any nostalgic attachment to the original is, like, 80 now.
Yeah.
And any kids who are going to be Addison Rae fans have either have never seen the movie or only think of it as that weird old movie that their mom likes. You know what I mean?
This was my logic, I think, about deciding this as my least favorite of the year. With Cinderella and He's All That, you hear the concept, you see the trailer. There's no fucking potential there. Yeah. Those movies are doomed to stink. This, you're taking a Christmas classic and poo-pooing on it.
I don't like the original Home Alone.
Really?
So it's fine. I like it.
I'm nostalgic to it.
I don't get the Macaulay Culkin hype. I guess I'm 30 years later for that take. Like it's okay. It's whatever.
Well, this one makes the original look like It's a Wonderful Life. So
fuck.
And the thing is, it casts a big cast of talented comedians. Ellie Kemper, Rob Delaney, Kenan Thompson.
Yeah, Ellie Kemper racist? Wasn't that a thing?
If she is, I do not know about it.
She was. Is she Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, didn't she go to, like, Klan pageants in, like, St. Louis when she was a kid or something like that? I swear to God I'm not crazy.
I'll have to do research.
I swear to God I'm not crazy. This was, like, a thing that came out recent-ish, like, the past couple of months. But, like, when she was, like, a kid, she went to, like, these debutante balls that were held by, like, the racist elite of St. Louis.
Oh, no.
But she was, like, a kid, so I don't know if she's, like, canceled or anything, but I'm pretty sure this is a thing that happened.
I'm going to have to look into that.
I'm sorry if... I definitely read something about this. I'm not going to take the time to confirm it on air, but... So I'm sorry, Ellie. I know you're listening. I'm sorry if I implicated you in a racist activity.
I'm glad that Archie Yates got work because I love him in Jojo Rabbit.
I just wish it was better work. Kid.
He's awful in this movie.
Really?
And it's not even his fault. He's not given anything.
How's Rob Delaney?
Terrible.
Yeah.
Him and Ellie Kemper, they're given nothing to do. And also they're the robbers and they're the main characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This does the whole, like, what if Kevin was the villain or whatever.
Kind of. The kid's annoying. Everyone's annoying. It's shot so poorly. It's lit so poorly. It's edited so poorly. Yeah. It's not funny. It's more violent than I was expecting. I expected than the Disney vibe. It still has, like, that Home Alone people getting stabbed and electrocuted.
Yeah.
But it's so much worse.
Yeah.
I wanted like, that scream that Marv does when he gets hit with the... Or, like, steps on
gets
nails
a
or...
a spider put on his face.
Gets hit by a brick. But, yeah, it's not good. Maybe a 1 out of 5, maybe a half star. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's a piece of garbage, trash, poo-poo, dumpster fire.
Yeah. Watch the Peanuts movie?
I
watched the penis movie, Kyle. No, the Peanuts movie.
I own it. I've never seen it.
It is delightful.
Yeah.
It's more vibe than film, as I like to say. It doesn't really have, like, a very, like...
That's always been Peanuts, though.
No, for sure. That's what I'm saying. Like, it really stays true to the spirit of the original. Like, it's kind of just sort of vignettes that are kind of loosely connected. Like, the main plot is Charlie Brown trying to get the attention of this new girl that's moved into town and everything. But he is such a colossal fuck-up continuously, as Charlie Brown is known to be historically. And so it's a very cute, very wholesome, very sweet movie.
Yeah.
Great for kids, great for families. There's a lot of, like, fun jokes where, like, none of the jokes are, like, there's not any, like, adult jokes or any, like, I think maybe there's, like, one fart joke or, like, baby humor. Like, the jokes, like, ride this consistent wave of, like, they're clever enough for adults, but they're, like, visually silly enough for kids.
I have to watch it. The animation definitely reminded me of, the Captain Underpants movie?
Ripped to fucking Blue Sky Studios.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
That's probably their best film, if I imagine. Peanuts movie?
Peanuts movie? I don't think I like a single Ice Age movie more than Peanuts. Robots is pretty good. You ever seen Robots?
Oh, as a child.
Wait, which one did you say?
I said Rio.
Oh, Rio.
I was kidding, but...
Jesse Eisenberg. You know that bird's extinct now?
Yes.
That's horrible.
Yikes.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, that's one that's always been on my radar.
Yeah, it's very cute. Very cute holiday movie.
Is Sally still a two-bit bitch?
You mean
Lucy?
Lucy?
Why did I say Sally?
No,
Lucy.
Sally's a sister. Sally's...
Right. Okay.
My only legitimate criticism of the Peanut movie is of the Peanuts movie is that Linus doesn't get anything to do.
Aww.
Linus doesn't really get, like, a subplot. I don't even think you see the blanket at any point.
No!
Like, you think he's got it, but, like, they don't ever mention it or anything. Like, it's... But other than that...
Okay.
It's a solid fucking watch.
Yeah.
4 out of 5.
Nice.
Good shit.
Hell yeah?
Yeah.
Is that all?
I think that's all. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I think that's all I've seen this week.
Let's talk about some new movies.
Some new movies. Want to
talk about a little bit of Ghostbuster?
Does Bustin'?
Bustin' makes me feel good.
You took my damn line. That's immediately what I was gonna say. I was checking real quick to see if I saw anything else. What did we talk about last? Was last week Belfast and Cliff? Oh, wow.
Yeah, it feels like 3 years ago, doesn't it?
Jesus, it really does, doesn't it?
It's because you fucking pushed these episodes back to Wednesday, so now, like, the gap feels longer.
Yeah, it does. And I know what happened. We saw Clifford on, like, Wednesday. Yeah, so, like, it's been... So I also saw Red Notice.
Oh, fuck. Jesus.
And I just forgot about it.
That should tell you everything you need to know about Red Notice.
That's literally, yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds is Ryan Reynolds. The Rock is
in his
the
same Rock. Outfit from Jumanji.
Absolutely. Gal Gadot is playing the villain, least threatening villain I've ever seen in my life.
Nice.
2 out of 5.
Cool.
That's all.
Anyway,
I'm not gonna waste anyone's time.
Moving on.
Busting. Does busting make us feel good?
That is the question to be answered today.
So,
Ghostbusters Afterlife.
You want to give a plot rundown?
So I guess this is technically Ghostbusters 3?
It's in the same universe as the first two.
Okay, so yes. Ghostbusters Afterlife picks up, we're following this family, a woman, I forget the character's name. It's probably like Sarah or Heather or something.
If you got it right with Sarah or Heather, let me fact
check. It's like Julie or something like that.
It's Callie.
God damn it, I would have gotten there.
That was like that scene in Ted where he just lists the names.
You're absolutely Sandy, Manny, right. Randy. Okay, so she's living in the city, she's down on her luck, she's got her two kids, she's got a boy who is Finn Wolfhard, I'm forgetting the characters' names, and she's got a little girl named Phoebe, the kid's name is Phoebe, right?
Kid's name's Trevor.
Are you the older kid?
Yeah.
Okay, Trevor and Phoebe.
Yep.
Finn Wolfhard and McKenna Grace. Finn Wolfhard is like a do-nothing shithead, and Phoebe Grace is, or McKenna Grace as Phoebe, holy shit. It's been a long day.
Yeah.
She's kind of like the nerdy, awkward one. And so they inherit an old spooky house from their deceased grandfather, who Kelly does not have a great relationship with. That's Carrie Coon, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Carrie Coon is Kelly. Say that 5 times fast. They inherit this creepy old house. And so when they move in, they start to discover... some secrets, maybe. Some mysteries left buried.
Some traps, you might say.
Some certain tools used for busting ghosts. And while they're there, they discover kind of a threat, an enemy that relates to the previous Ghostbusters movie. And so they have to team up to solve this mystery and bust these ghosts.
Yep. That is true.
Kyle, what do you think of Ghostbusters Afterlife?
So I think we both went into this movie. We didn't like the trailer at all.
Nah.
We thought this movie was going to be really bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't really bad.
I agree. I was pleasantly surprised.
This is a perfectly decent...
It's fine.
Very nice, very charming family film.
Here's the thing about this movie.
You know?
This goes back to Ghostbusters 2016, too. People getting mad online about these Ghostbusters movies... What is it about Ghostbusters that means so much to people?
You watch that movie, it's such a simple comedy.
Like, it's like a dinky little ragtag comedy, lightning in a bottle movie from the 80s that only works off the back of that cast.
Like, this is not like a Back to the Future or Indiana Jones.
It's not Star Wars. Like, yeah. This isn't meant to have, like, sequel. Like, it isn't... It has this, like, reverence that it just feels like it hasn't earned. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And like... I think people just really hold this franchise in too high regard. So, just ranting about that, I think people are getting way too mad online about this, just like they did with the last one. But yeah, this is a perfectly decent little family action movie. The performances are pretty solid across the board. I think the standout, we can probably agree, is McKenna Grace.
McKenna Grace is... I mean, she's been in things for years, but she is going to be a star, like she's an adult.
New Millie Bobby Brown incoming. New Stranger Things kid just dropped. Her friend, she makes a friend in the new town.
This dude's awesome.
He's very funny.
I gotta find his name. Just
on a scale of Asian child actors from this year, it's this kid and then the dude from Clifford.
Logan Kim is his name.
Logan Kim does a great job.
He's very funny.
Very funny.
His name is Podcast, his character's name. He always has headphones on and like a mic.
Most relatable character in a movie for us, I feel. Like we do. That's what we do.
The second standout besides McKenna Grace is Paul Rudd.
For sure.
Who's super likable.
He's their teacher in this new town. And he kind of gets involved in the mystery without spoilers.
What I was very surprised about is how well put together from a technical point of view.
Yeah, it's a
very well shot, very Spielberg inspired. It feels like an Amblin production.
Jason Reitman really wants to be Steven Spielberg.
He does. But that's not a bad person.
This movie has a surprising amount of effort put into the craft of it. I think we both remember that opening sequence. I won't spoil or anything, but there's like some really cool practical stuff they do that carries on throughout the film, and I think we were pleasantly surprised by the attention to detail with stuff like that. Like it was surprising for me at least.
And the fact that the whole presentation and the practical and even the CG in this looks better than some the Marvel movies when the budget of this was $75 million compared to the $200 million of all the this was a. It felt grounded.
It felt
intangible.
It felt like a very modest little action movie. It didn't feel like it was bloated or kind of overstuffed or overstaying, overdoing it, I guess.
And it was definitely better than 2016 Ghostbusters.
Yeah, 2016 Ghostbusters sucked. Have I told you the story about how I watched that movie?
No.
I was in New York and I saw in a 4D theater. And it's the worst theatrical experience of my entire 40's life.
40's awful, man.
No, it was awful. It was like going through a fucking car wash in a convertible.
Yeah.
The seat was jostling around and shit. I was shaking around the whole time. I would get fucking misted.
Yeah.
And every time Slimer threw up on screen, you'd get fucking gooed in the audience. I'm getting jostled around on a fucking roller coaster while I'm watching these four
improv
women. Show. Yeah, I'm watching this long form improv show.
But not a good one.
No, fucking. Yeah, no, the Ghostbusters Afterlife, at the very least, is better than Ghostbusters 2016. I think where it probably fails is mostly in the script.
The dialogue, some of it is very charming, and, I found some of it genuinely funny, but a lot of the exposition
The jokes are kind of hit or miss.
Hit or miss, and then some of the exposition definitely comes across as clunky and overwrought.
But it maintains enough heart as it goes to kind of
And what really stops me, what really brings this movie down, is I think the third act really goes overboard.
Really goes hard with the fan service.
With the fan service.
You know what reminded me a lot of? The end of the Mandalorian season 2.
Mm-hmm.
When fucking Luke Skywalker shows up and I was like...
Spoilers!
Oh, okay. Yeah, fucking... Oh my god.
That was literally...
For everyone who's been under a rock for the past year.
But, yeah, it definitely goes overboard.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really clunky... Some of it was fine.
Yeah.
Some of it didn't bother me.
But it's kind of sweet. So it's I feel like I can give it a little bit of a pass, you know what I mean?
There's nothing particularly special about this movie.
No.
It's just charming.
It's
charming.
I just think they're neat. It's a neat little film. Do we want to get into spoilers real quick?
Yeah, what's your rating?
3 out of 5.
3 out of 5. I was almost able to get it to a 3.5, but not quite. 3 out of 5.
Yeah, it's probably closer to a 2.5 for me, but it's good. It's a sweet little
I'm a
movie.
Little more positive, but and it seems like actual Ghostbusters fans online are very positive.
Sure.
So if you're a fan, if you're in the 40s, no one listens to us in the 40s. If you like the original Ghostbusters, you'll probably enjoy this.
If we're getting into spoilers, they all show back up. Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Ernie Hudson. Even a fourth Ghostbuster who you might not expect to show up for various real life reasons.
So the father of Carrie Coon, who's passed away, that she has a bad relationship with, is
Egon Spengler, the member of the original Ghostbusters, played by Harold Ramis in the original film, and I guess also by extension is played by Harold Ramis in this. Movie. He's played by a computer in this movie.
He is played by a computer.
He is brought back with CGI technology in Mostly tasteful.
I had heard about this before I saw it. Yeah, and we were both dreading about it. But this isn't like a Rogue One situation.
No, he only comes in the end, and he doesn't say anything. So
thank God.
There's no, like, uncanny valley. And, like, it's good CG. Like, he looks okay. So I think it's as tasteful as possible going that route.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And, you know, yeah, right.
Fucking Zool comes back.
Something I didn't like about this movie is they really just recreate the first one again, Force Awakens the movie.
This really is the fucking Force Awakens of the Ghostbusters franchise, which is the funniest thing I've ever said now that I say it out loud.
But, yeah, the fan service, the Ghostbusters show up and help save the day.
And you know, all the kids, they get the proton packs, the traps. There's even a ghost that's kind of like Slimer called Muncher.
Marshmallow Man.
The dogs, the Gozer, fucking the gatekeeper. And
the most cringe part of fan service is when the cop goes, "Who you gonna call?"
Oh, yeah, Bokeem Woodbine shows up for 1 second.
What the fuck is that?
Fucking, awful line. Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon become the gatekeeper.
That was such a strange scene.
That's a weird scene.
It felt like it was made for more of the comedic intent of, like, what's the guy from the original? Plays that same role.
Oh, Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis. Yeah. Something that silly.
Those dogs look pretty cool, though.
The Azul and Vince... Vince Clortho are practical.
Very
nice.
I remember being fucking in the theater and freaking out. I was like, "That's a puppet. That's a real puppet."
You also freaked out at the J.K. Simmons cameo.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons showed up for like a split second. Yeah, fucking gets torn in half.
The worst part of the movie, I think we can agree, is Finn Wolfhard and fucking his girlfriend, whoever the fuck she is.
Kind of non-entities. Could have been replaced with lamps and nothing would have changed. Yeah, I don't know. All in all, I think this movie's fine. I'm not going to remember it in 2 weeks, but I don't regret seeing it.
But if a friend of mine was like, I want to see Ghostbusters, you want to come? Like, I wouldn't say no.
No, fuck yeah.
This is very light.
You could pair this with a Goosebumps movie from a few years ago.
This is like cotton candy.
Yeah, sure.
It's not a lot of substance there. But it's sweet.
It's good while you're there.
Yeah.
3 out of 5.
3 out of 5.
Okay. Next movie.
Next film.
Will Smith. YouTuber has made his feature film debut in his latest attempt to win an award.
In his latest attempt to shake off the dust of Collateral Beauty and After Earth.
He has starred in a new movie called King Richard that is about the father. I guess for all intents and purposes, it's really about the family.
Yeah. It's about Richard Williams, Venus, and Serena.
And their sisters and their mother and everything. And it's sort of it's a biopic. It kind of covers, like, their upbringing and, like, his involvement in their training and everything.
It basically covers how Richard Williams was a very eccentric man.
Before they were born.
He had this whole plan on how to turn his two children into superstars, into tennis stars.
Which is kind of like an ethically dubious, like, center for the movie. Like, a lot of people kind of question that judgment on that.
And I'll go into more depth later on it, but...
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's real life, so it's kind of hard to spoil anything. Right. But, like, but I...
Yeah, if you don't know.
I wonder what happened to Venus and Serena, you know?
But I know for people our age, we didn't really know the story.
Yeah, true.
This was another movie that from the trailer, we were not excited for.
I thought it looked very schmaltzy, pandering, and generic. It is all of those things. But it also has a surprising amount going for it that I didn't expect.
Where this succeeds, where other biopics fail, is that this one's a character piece. A character study.
It feels more like a film about... Like fully fleshed out three-dimensional characters rather than reading a Wikipedia page.
I know over the last couple of years, that's the complaint we've had about a lot of them, is it feels like a Wikipedia page. Yes. This one, I get a full scope of his character.
It feels like an arc.
It feels like he goes through a character
arc. And like the girls, like, both go through an arc, like learning and becoming...
Let's start
up
with the reason that this movie works as well as it does. All of the performances are so good.
Will Smith's gonna get nominated.
This is a top three Will Smith performance. Excellent.
He's pretty fantastic in this. Yeah,
because
he's kind of like this, like, he's kind of a wimp.
he completely strips away that movie star persona.
Like Richard Williams is just kind of this old fucking dork, like this old dweeb who's kind of wearing his little tennis shorts and everything.
Venus is the one that's more of the main character, right?
Yes.
Venus is played by Sania Sidney, and she's excellent.
Yes.
Incredible. And the wife is played by, I can't do that one. Do you want to try that one?
Here, let me. Well, it's too far away.
Okay.
I don't want to get up.
She's
great. She's terrific excellent. In the movie.
John Bernthal. This is like the best performance I've ever seen.
John Bernthal is one of the unsung heroes of Hollywood. If you need a character role if you need someone to knock that out of the park, John Bernthal's your guy.
This is the most legitimately nice person that he's ever played.
He feels like Ned Flanders in this movie. He's got the little mustache and everything.
So the cast is excellent across the board.
Yes.
The writing, it's not anything special. It
doesn't reinvent the wheel
nothing. But it does the job. It
exists in like that biopic kind of formula. Like it doesn't like shift it at all. Mm-hmm. But there's enough wrinkles kind of thrown throughout and enough like dramatic not licenses, but I guess
flares.
Yeah, flares. Enough dramatic flair that doesn't make it feel too Hollywood or anything. Like it still feels very grounded, but it never bored me. Like I felt pretty compelled.
I think that was our biggest surprise when we saw that 2-hour and 20-something-minute running time. We were like, but I was never bored.
It's just so fascinating watching Will Smith just like interact with all of these characters and everything.
Because
like,
everyone's so damn good.
Like he's like that I guess that person, but that character is just so like stubborn and hot-headed and strong-willed, and it's just fascinating to see him operate in the world.
Like, the filmmaking isn't anything special.
Sure. I don't give a shit about tennis either, so, I guess also depending on how you feel about that kind of will determine...
Like, it's generically shot.
Yeah.
It's competently directed. There's nothing bad about it.
The strength of this movie is for sure the performances. That's 100. Where this movie really stands out.
I think Will Smith he deserves to and is going to get a nomination.
Yes, absolutely.
Will this be his second nomination?
He got nominated for Ali.
And Pursuit of Happiness.
And Concussion.
He did get nominated for Concussion?
He did get nominated for that.
I thought that was one he just really wanted to get nominated for.
Let's double check. I think he did get nominated for that, though.
So
I think he might be sitting at 4 with this one, if he gets nominated for this.
You might be correct. Let's look here. Concussion, a movie I never saw, but...
Heard it was all right.
No.
Ooh, I was wrong.
No, all he was not. He was nominated. Let's go to Will. Oh, look at him.
Look at him.
Oh,
big
that's old, hot. That's
big old
hot.
Cheesy grin.
2. Okay. He's been nominated for 2 for Ali in Pursuit of Happiness.
There you go.
This is going to be his 3rd.
Hasn't been nominated for an Oscar since 2006. Yeah, he's going to get nominated for this. Incredible. I don't really know how much we don't really got to get into spoilers,
I guess. We don't. We don't. No.
No, this is... If you're looking for like a sweet family movie for Thanksgiving, like...
This is the definition of, like, a crowd pleaser that, like, your parents, your grandparents will love this fucking movie.
Absolutely. Show them this movie, they'll love you.
Yeah.
3.5 out of 5. This was a lot of fun.
Solid 3.5, man. I'm pleasantly surprised. Yeah.
And now, we move into our 3rd film.
The musical.
Tick. 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 Boom.
So I guess I'll
give a little context, a little history, a little plot rundown.
So this is based on a musical,
yes,
written by Jonathan Larson.
That is
semi-autobiographical.
The musical is semi-autobiographical. Like the stage show is semi-autobiographical, but the movie is more overtly. Because in the stage show, it's like he's like a fictionalized version of himself.
Yeah.
Just called John. But in the movie, it's made like overtly clear that it's Jonathan.
So Jonathan Larson, who is famous for writing Rent.
Yes.
In the 90s, basically the show of Tick, Tick, Boom is a semi-autobiographical about his own experience in New York trying to get a musical off the ground. One that he had been working on for...
Like 8 years.
Almost a decade. And the trials and tribulations with growing old and not knowing how much time you have.
He starts the movie on the cusp of his 30th birthday, at the end of his youth.
It's basically about the struggle of, like, how much time do I actually realistically have to make something great?
Yes.
And that's basically what it's about. It's about this guy who died before he got to see his work fulfilled. It
was the night of before the first public performance of Rent. He died of a sudden aneurysm.
Yeah.
Something like that. Never got to see the fruits of his labor. But I have to say, I think his life is pretty lovingly handled and chronicled in this movie. I thought Tick, Tick, Boom was an absolute blast.
I enjoyed this movie quite a bit.
Yes. I'm going to say this. I feel a little weird saying this right now before I've seen every movie this year, but man, Andrew Garfield, maybe the best performance of the year. Incredible. I don't think this movie will crack my top 10. I do have my issues with some of the filmmaking choices, but if we're talking strictly, like watch this movie solely as a showcase for the talent that is Andrew Garfield.
He's incredible.
Incredible. So captivating to watch. I couldn't take my eyes
so
off
him. So much energy.
Jonathan Larson, I never seen any like interviews or anything, so I don't know how accurate the mannerisms are, but he's so like eccentric and kind of dramatic, and like the way he speaks it, like every time he speaks, it's like he's saying poetry. Like everything kind of has this gravitas to it, and he's just very neurotic and kind of all over the place, and he gets those tics, no pun intended. He just gets them down so well, and you can't take your eyes off of him when he's on screen. Mm-hmm. Like I said, like he's just electric and honestly, if the Oscars were today, he'd probably be who I'd give it to.
He's so good.
He's man. incredible singer.
Oh yeah,
his voice is wonderful. The rest of the performances are all pretty strong too. It's just that like he is definitely the centerpiece of this whole thing, and he absolutely nails it, knocks it right out of the fucking park.
I agree.
The rest of the movie is pretty good.
It's pretty good. I don't know how well it will play to people that know nothing about musical theater or...
That is true, but it's also like... I feel like if you're not into musical theater, why are you going to watch the biopic about Jonathan Larson?
That is
you
fair.
You know what I mean?
I guess just like people who come across it on
Netflix.
The
very nature of this movie is it only exists
for... Oh, if you hate musicals, you're going
to... Yeah, no, this is not going to convert any non-believers. This movie is essentially the case for why we need musicals.
Yeah.
Like, it really, like, at the core of it is, like, the passion for that art and the necessity for it and you know, like the longing that these artists have to make something good and worthwhile that people are going to see and love. Change the world, even.
Yeah, Andrew Garfield was definitely the through line for me, who kept me engaged.
Watching
the
movie, this movie's directed by Lin-Manuel Miranda, his directorial debut. Very solid job, first-time director. Does nothing, like, too spectacular or flashy. He keeps the story mostly grounded for most of it. There's like a few...
There's a few scenes that really stand out in the back half that are very memorably visually executed.
What is the song? I don't remember the title. It's the one he plays at the piano in my favorite scene in the movie.
Really good scene.
I forget the name of the song, but he finds out a close person to him is dying, and he sneaks into like an amphitheater at night, and he starts playing the piano on stage.
It's a really good scene.
He sings the song about him and his friend, like... back in the day.
That's one of my favorites too.
Probably the most powerful scene in the movie. Yeah, no, that like this movie was like a 3.5 for me for sure for most of it. But then it really hits you with that ending, and I was like, yeah,
it was good. It was definitely memorable. I don't know. I think Lin-Manuel's direction visually is okay. It's competently shot and directed. I had some issues technically.
Sure,
but I
like what.
The lighting outdoors really bothered me in a weird way.
Yeah.
I thought it was really overblown and,
The only scene I can think of like that, like, you're right, is the fucking the diner.
Yeah.
During that sequence, like, that one's lit kind of weird, but I don't know, I never noticed that.
I don't know if I love the structuring of the film. It was very odd.
See,
very strange.
I kind of dig that it's this kind of frantic... like scattershot look at this chunk of this person's life, because it really like amplifies like what's going on in his brain.
I definitely thought it worked at points.
This very, like, anxious person, like, he's always thinking all the time, and so the story is kind of jumping around from scene to scene, but it never loses you. Like, it never becomes confusing. The only thing I got a little lost on is it's a little hard to tell what's happening in reality and what's happening. Yes,
that was.
But at
one
the
of
same
the...
time, I also kind of like that you can't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like that the world inside his mind and the real world are almost inseparable to him.
Right.
And so they kind of present it that way, which I think is a neat trick on Lin-Manuel's part. If that's his decision to make in the vision for the film. I don't know. I think he does a really solid job with this one. The staging for a lot of the songs is fun. It never gets too flashy, but it's still like visually entertaining and everything.
And a lot of I enjoyed this movie a lot.
Yeah, no, for
I
sure,
thought it was really
sure.
good. I think that all the songs are good. It's just not really my style of musical song.
I might like the score for this better than Rent.
Hot take. I agree with that.
I think I might like this
because I don't love the score of Rent.
Rent maybe has more like highlights,
yeah.
But I think this one is a more consistent score. Louder Than Words rocks my shit every goddamn time. That almost brought me to tears. This movie almost got me there.
There's good songs in here for sure. It's just not in general like my style of
sure.
musical theater.
Sure. What, you don't like rock?
Not in this way.
Yeah, fair.
But again, I can't stress enough how good Andrew Garfield is. He carries the whole film.
It's just very clear how much love and respect Andrew Garfield, and especially Lin-Manuel, and, like, admiration have for Jonathan Larson.
Yeah.
Like, you can, like watching Jonathan's life unfold, you can tell, oh, yeah, this guy directly inspired. Like, I can picture a young Lin-Manuel Miranda watching, like, a ripped bootleg of Rent back in 2002, just bawling his eyes out and everything, you know.
But I also kind of appreciated how it didn't sugarcoat his flaws either.
No.
It shows he's kind of a fucking wreck, like, and a mess.
But like, yeah, exactly. No,
like
he
really doesn't treat his girlfriend that well.
Nah.
Not like abusive, just ignoring her.
But it's all for the sake of something we know. Like there's like a tragicness to it. That we know it's all gonna work out in the end, but he doesn't and never will. You know what I mean? Like there's like a looming sort of ominous to that I think really adds a layer to the film.
It was strange. I was definitely reminded. I mean, basically thematically, there's two songs that are the exact same thing as Bo Burnham's Inside. In terms of the struggle of making art, there's literally the I'm turning 30. Cusp of 30, like, birthday thing.
Did Bo Burnham just rip off Tick, Tick, Boom?
That's just interesting. We have to dive.
We might need to look into that.
We have to dissect. But I was, you know, it's definitely an inherently relatable thing. Like, I want to do something with my life that is bigger than me.
I think,
but what the fuck
I think
am
if,
I...
if you are an artist,
yeah,
you will find something to relate to in this movie. This isn't just for musical people. It's for people who have that desire to create.
Yeah.
Like
a generation of theater kids, this is going to be the most they ever relate to.
It's going
to
be their Bible.
This is their Black Panther.
And for that reason, and as a showcase for a character study, and just a showcase for Andrew Garfield absolutely acting his ass off.
He's great.
I think it's a worthwhile time. Great movie. 4 out of 5 for me.
I think it's a good movie that's rough around the edges.
Sure.
But the rough edges don't ruin the experience. No. 3.5 for me.
Fair.
Yeah.
Burned. All right. Cool. Kind of burned through that one. We're gonna.
Oh, you know, 40 minutes.
Oh shit. Well, that's perfect. Well, we're gonna go see House of Gucci here in a little bit. So
House
Kyle,
of Gucci.
Oh my goodness.
Let's go,
Kyle. You want to wrap this one up? Bring us home.
Hell yeah! If you guys enjoy the podcast, first of all, thank you.
Leave us a like. Leave us a.
We were.
A review.
We were kind of talking earlier about how we want to expand things into next year.
So we're going to make some plans here coming up, kind of get some things
get
going.
Get some stuff rolling.
For sure. Definitely look out for some more content from the Cinema Shakedown boys in the coming
Absolutely.
Months.
If you guys enjoy the podcast, you can follow it on Twitter and Instagram at Cinema Shakedown, and you can follow me personally on Twitter and Letterboxd at Kyle Craigbaum. That's KRIEGHBAUM.
And you can follow me on Twitter at @the_fatman99 and on Letterboxd at my name, Jordan Dennis. Real quick, I'm going to plug for the Kit Clapper website.
I was
website.
About to do that.
Oh, shit. What the fuck? No, I just wrote a couple reviews for the Clapper website. One for No Time to Die, one for Belfast. Would love it if you guys check those out over there. Kyle, you want to tell the people what the fuck is up next week?
Absolutely. So next week, we are going to be talking about three films.
Yes.
We are going to be talking about the very anticipated video game film, Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City.
Oh my god.
I think we'll also maybe mention, I think we're going to try to see the first Resident Evil.
We'll see if we can squeeze that one.
House of Gucci. The new Ridley Scott vehicle. The second Ridley Scott film of the year. Yeah. The first is Jordan's favorite film.
Yes, let's go. I can't wait to see all these fucking famous people embarrass themselves.
And then, I don't even remember what the other film was.
Disney's new film, Encanto.
That's the reason I didn't remember what it was.
Anyway, tune in next week to hear our thoughts on all those movies that we're clearly very excited for.
Ciao.